Hey everybody, this is Caddy. You are in the Year End Cafe with none other than my favorite bass player. I don't know about you, but Mr. John Taylor. How
None
are
other.
you? None other than.
None other than,
How are you on
I'm
this
all right. I'm all right.
nice
It's
day?
Friday. It is a beautiful day here, actually. It's cold and bright and just the way I like it.
Yes, it's very nice. It's a little warmer in New York today than it has been, and I like that as well. And you look very dapper in your La Freak shirt, just so everyone could get a visual. So the year-end cafes is where we tackle what happened in 2023. So I'm gonna start you off with something that you know is very near and dear to my heart. Which would be your the best movie and or television show that you've seen in 2023? It doesn't mean it came out in 2023, but if you've seen it this year, I want to know about it.
I mean, to be honest, I have a hard time remembering things from too long ago, and particularly with TV, which, we're watching, well, I find myself watching a lot of. I mean, I do think that the TV series that I thought packed the most punch was The Bear, season two. I just thought that was just, I mean, what it the way it talked about family and addiction and codependence, it was real art. I thought it was the music was great. I thought that it was, it's not always when you get a fantastic first season, you don't always get a better second season. But I thought they really did something special. So yeah, I really liked that. I mean, in terms of films, I find it a lot harder to make that commitment, that 2-hour commitment to
2 hours if you're lucky.
I mean, I did like May December. I did, that felt like a grown-up movie, and I did like that. I thought that from a music perspective, I thought it was really interesting. I don't think I've been aware of anybody doing what the director did, which was basically he took a score from a 1970s movie, The Go-Between, with Julie Christie. He just took the score and used it in his new film, and that I thought was really kind of an amazing choice that really did a lot for the film. It framed the film in a really unusual way, because the score was written by Michel Legrand. It's a very, very dramatic, very emotional, but of its time score, very melodramatic. I can't imagine anybody writing a score like that today, which maybe is why the director Todd Haynes went back to using something. But I thought that was an interesting choice. We watched, is it The Killers of the Flower Moon? We watched that, and I liked that, and I thought it was a really interesting story, well told. I thought, it was worth seeing. And that's actually, I'm going to give an honorable mention to Faraway Downs, which is,
I don't know that one.
well, Baz Luhrmann made an epic film called Australia about
Oh, right. With
20. About 16 years ago, and it didn't really connect. I mean, we couldn't make it through the first 15 minutes, and he's gone back and he's re-edited it, made it longer, and then divided it into six parts as a TV series, and it's really fantastic. And we were watching it thinking it was new, and we were thinking, God damn, Nicole looks good. She looks, and so does Hugh Jackman. Wow. And we were about up to the fifth episode before we realized, no, this is that Australia movie that we couldn't stand when it came out. But it's great. And again, it's got a you know, it's got a really serious theme. It's got a, it's definitely, it's beautiful. And those guys, they're amazing. Everything about it is great.
I had just read about that. Going, because I don't do an Oscar cafe with you, although I feel like you should join Nick and I one year. Going back to May, December, of course, no, probably not surprising at all to you. The other person who shared the same fact you shared with me is Brian, because he looked up the score right away. And what I think Todd Haynes wanted to do was sort of put a little camp into the movie, because it's based on a true story, and the way the toxic media covered the true story back in the day when there was the National Enquirer and the Star, which now everything's online, they covered it with such melodrama that even if one of them went to the supermarket, it was a news story. So when that scene where Julianne Moore opens the refrigerator and says, "We don't have enough hot dogs," and that music plays, I think, I don't know. It seemed like it was for camp effect for me, but it
maybe,
was
maybe.
I really love that.
Yeah, I mean, it's. There was an episode of Euphoria in the last season, which had a similar musical content, and I was like, "What the hell is this?" And I love these websites where you can look up the music that's being used in shows. And it was all French and Italian music from the 60s and the 70s. They hadn't, you know, they'd gone back. And I think it's quite interesting because, of course, you know, movies, you know, there's nothing new about them, you know, using songs from a period to get a particular mood. But I think Quentin Tarantino also, he used... there was one particular cue, which is what the word that is used to describe a musical sequence. There was one particular cue that he'd taken from the life and times of Judge Roy Bean. And he took this cue and he placed it in the scene where Brad Pitt goes to the ranch, the Spahn Ranch. And he's walking and he's looking for, he doesn't know he's going to find Bruce Dern, but that scene where he's walking through this creaky old shack, you know, and he doesn't know what he's going to find. He knows there's something weird about this place that he's in. And Quentin used this particular cue from a 70s movie that I don't think I've ever seen. But, you know, I think that's really interesting, actually, taking old cues and sort of reusing them. I mean, I've always liked film music. You know, I was thinking, you know, when I was a kid, you know, I liked pop, but I also liked film music. You know, film music really, you know, spoke to me. I think it's the nearest that I came to like a classical, listening to classical music, really, was listening to orchestral music, actually, which might be a good time to mention the James Bond podcast, which we're going to rerun, aren't we?
We are. What would you? This is a good time to bring it up.
Yeah, because I was just about to say that actually, like James Bond film scores were, I think, when I was a young kid, and I, you know, the music to the James Bond films, you know, really got under my skin when I was young, you know, when I was single digits, like nine. You know, and they've really stayed with me.
It was great. I re-listened to it. I'm not sure I had listened to the whole thing the first time, but I did when you resent it to me. It was great. You're good at that stuff. Quickly, before we move on, have you seen The Holdovers yet? Do you have any desire?
Yeah, I like that. Like that a lot.
We're watching that tonight.
I like that.
Okay.
Yeah.
And did you see Naiad? I think you'd like that.
Yes.
Did
you? Yes, I saw that.
They were wonderful.
Yeah. It was great.
Yeah, they're great. What might be in 2023 the best book or podcast you read, listened to? I think you used to be a podcast guy. I don't know if you still are.
No, I'm really not, actually.
Oh.
No, I mean, it would probably be Fluffy Raxall's podcast if I had to, you know, nominate any for the podcast of the year. I mean, the book of the year, I don't know whether it came out this year, but the book that I enjoyed the most was Demon Copperhead by Barbara Kingsolver. She's, you know, she's an epic writer, and this is an epic. Takes place in Appalachia. It's actually kind of a retelling of David Copperfield, which I've never read, but it is a retelling of David Copperfield set today amidst the opium crisis, the opiate crisis. It's just wonderful. And you know, it's a big book. And what I tend to do these days, I'll download the audio and I'll have the book. So, you know, just sometimes it's easier to put the audio on. And I'll bounce between, and the audio is great. I recommend it highly. I don't know who the guy is that read it, but he sounds like Eminem. So he's a really interesting character to have read this, to have to read this. Actually, the other book that I really liked this year was Small Mercies by Dennis Lehane, which takes place in a neighborhood of Boston in the late 60s, early 70s. And I read it when I was in Boston. And again, amazing audio. If you're into audiobooks, Small Mercies by Dennis Lehane is incredible.
Very interesting. Wow. I tried to read more this year. I did for me, but
I
not
think it
as
gets harder. I actually think it's getting harder and harder to read. The kind of, you know, our attention, my attention span, because of my phone, is just becoming smaller and smaller and smaller. And you know, so you know, sometimes just, you know, listening. I mean, I find, like, when I'm driving, for instance, I actually have quite a good attention span for listening. I do most of my best listening in the car, actually, if I'm by myself, because I'm wide awake and alert because I'm driving. But there's like this part of my brain that can actually listen, that's not, you know, not distracted by listening.
I'll get there someday. Have you ever listened to the Smartless podcast with Jason
No.
Bateman and Sean? Oh, it's very funny. I
No.
think you'd like it. They're clever. Best music that you heard in 2023, again, did not have to, because I know you're a classical guy, did not have to come out
Yeah,
then, but what you
right.
spent time listening to.
Well, I stayed away from the classical today. I've stayed away from it. I mean, I mean,
All fair.
most of you all know that that's what I tell everybody. That's mostly what I listen to at the moment. But I'm gonna run a few things that were meant a lot to me by people that are still living. You know, I don't know whether any of the other guys mentioned it, but we all went to see Brian Eno at the Royal Festival Hall. We took a family outing or a works outing, and we all went, and we took a couple of boxes, and Brian Eno performed with the Baltic Orchestra, and it was really profound. It started off slow, and I wasn't sure whether it was going to work or not, but it found its groove. And you know, I what was interesting, I mean, I you know, Brian Eno, probably when I you know, if I was to make a list of, you know, the artists that have brought me the most joy in my life, through music, Brian Eno would certainly top five, maybe top three. And but you know, but I've met him once. I he's not a but you know, you never get a chance to see him perform. So, and the show started pretty slowly, and I don't think, and it kept moving. There was no break in the music for about 40 minutes, if I remember correctly. So at least 30 minutes, 40 minutes. And when they finally stopped, and there was this pause, and the audience just got up and just let rip with applause. And strangely, that was for me the best moment of the show. And it was the moment where I don't know how many people were there, 1,500 people, 2,000 maybe, people who I would say, like me and Nick, you know, have been following Brian Eno's career for 40 years or more, you know, and really, and you know, I've been profoundly moved by a lot of the music that he's made, but I've never had that chance to applaud him in public, to thank him in public. And you just saw this outpouring of gratitude. And it was like, for me, it was very clear. We weren't applauding what we'd just heard. We were applauding the 40 years of creative generosity, the 40 years of extraordinary music that he has been a part of creating. And
that's
you
great.
Know, and I, it made, yeah, and it made me think about, you know, our fans and how, you know, how important it is that we let them express themselves during the course of a concert. You know, that it is important, you know, that it is a conversation, you know, that it isn't a one way, you know, it isn't all about us. It's a, you know, it's, you know, you're sending out a signal, but you have to have, the signal has to be received. And I felt a small part of Brian Eno's journey, you know, and I'm Nick's standing right next to me, and I know he feels a small part of Brian Eno's journey, and everybody in the room, and that it was really magical. And from that moment on, I had the best time. So that was a real treat, and I hope he does more shows. He also talked, you know, it was just after, you know, the invasion of Gaza, and we'll talk a little bit about this later on, but he talked very wisely about that, about what was happening down there. And, you know, he's become a very, very thoughtful, very compassionate, very, you know, he's a very interesting man. And, you know, and I go back to his early work a lot, you know, when he was just, you know, and how he transitioned from being, you know, a pop musician to being, you know, an artist, I suppose. But anyway, music that has moved me, you know, the album probably the album that I enjoyed most by a contemporary artist this year was Steve Lacy's Gemini Wright's album.
Wow.
And I just found that it just ticked all the boxes for me about what I like in, you know, it's contemporary, but it's musical. You know, we've got real players in there. We've got real bass, we've got real drums. You know, he's got a really cool sort of harmonic sensibility. I liked that a lot. I mean, I also liked, I think for me, the song of the year was the Doja Cat Paint the Town Red song, which was built on the lick from Walk On By.
Yeah.
And I thought that was, you know, it's been a while. I mean, you know, there was a period, however long ago, where, you know, hip hop was, you know, so much about taking a lick, a sample that you knew, and building a new song on top. But it feels like it's been a long time since I've heard something quite like this. And you've got the combination of, and it's a particularly nourishing sample, which is Dionne Warwick singing the hook from Walk On By. But then what she brings to it as well, I thought that was pretty good. Actually, I quite like that Scissor song as well. I forget what it's called, but I quite like that. There's the one song of hers that I really like. Travis Scott, Utopia, is a bit of, it's a bit of a masterpiece. That's not to say I've listened to it all that much, but it's a very thoughtful, very carefully, very well-considered, very expensive, very wide-ranging, very broad piece of music. You have to like hip-hop. You know, right. You have to like the style of singing that Travis Scott is known for. But I feel that, like, he wanted to make a masterpiece. And I'm always, you know, I'm always sensitive to artists, whoever they are, you know, because I can hear everybody listening to this go, no, Travis Scott. But, you know, I'm always, you know, I'm hip with somebody that goes out and really wants to make a statement, you know, and I feel that he did that. You know, Gila and I would listen to that album when we were on that last American tour. I also want to mention the soundtrack to Oppenheimer, which was by Ludwig Göransson. And I think in terms of contemporary mood music, shall we say, you know, it's absolutely remarkable what he does with electronics. It's It's like a symphony of electronic sound. Not easy listening at all, but no. I feel like he's perhaps the most progressive film composer out there right now. Oh, and I also like what Nick Cave did for Dharma. That's really good too. Very different, but I thought that was, it was kind of Eno-esque, but that I thought was great. All right, I'm done. I've answered that question.
You gave me something to follow up on with what you were saying. When you listen to music, do you listen to it as a fan, or do you, like when you were talking about Travis Scott, do you also listen to it as someone who has been in a recording studio and understands better than the average person what an artist is trying to achieve?
Well, I have to be dragged into listening to Travis Scott. You know, it's not something I go to willingly, but, you know, Gila loves hip hop. And, you know, and she was like, oh, I want to hear it. Let's hear it. And I was like, oh, not now. I think we were driving to San Diego. And I was like, okay, fine. You know, and then we put it on in the car and it was dark. And I was like, wow, you know, this is impressive. And, it's not easy to navigate, you know, commercial, you know, making something that's commercial, but something that's compelling. I mean, I liked Travis Scott a few albums ago. There was one album that he did where he was like an Action Man model on the front, and I thought that was kind of brilliant. I mean, it was kind of Kanye light in a way, but I really liked that album. But I haven't really liked anything that he's done, you know. But then he's with a Kardashian, you know. They have a baby or a Jenner, and they have a baby, and he he's at the center of this. You know, I mean, this awful thing that happened at this show in Houston,
right,
which almost cancels him. You know, he's lucky that he somehow manages to skate around that without any real, you know, and, you know, to what extent he was responsible, I don't know, but I'm sure he carries a lot of, you know, guilt about it. But whatever, I think that he went into this album thinking this album has got to be special, and he brought in a huge amount of collaborators, and just bringing an album like that to completion it's not easy. It's never easy. I thought it was worth, you know, if you, I mean, I don't think it's going to appeal to too many people that are going to be listening to this, quite honestly, but, you know, I did think it was worth mentioning.
You never know, they just might give it a listen. So I wanted to, you did touch on this also while you were talking about music, but let's talk about your event of the year that is not Duran Duran related.
I mean, there was nothing really that came close to the moment that the first hostages were released. I mean, there was nothing that came even remotely close to the feeling that I think we all shared watching those ambulances appear with the flags flying, you know, and it was like, it was just like an absolute moment of possibility. And, oh my God, you know, that they can actually find a way, you know, some kind of common language has been spoken between people, you know, amidst the hatred and the division, you know, that somehow managed to bring that moment to bear. And, you know, with the flashing lights, and I mean, that will be the image on that will be used at the year end to represent what the year was about. There was nothing even remotely close to that. And then, you know, then the next few days where you would wake up and go, oh, you know, have they let more out and more come out? You know, and it just seemed like the whole day was built around waiting. I mean, even for us, you know, I mean, I cannot even begin to imagine what it's like, the closer that you got to it, and for the families. But it was a moment where you felt that, you felt hope. And, you know, and we, you know, the attack, you know, just taken us. I mean, it was just so, so terrible. But there was hope in that. And, you know, and I guess it was never really going to last. But that was the event of the year for me. And, you know, we can only hope and pray that, you know, that it wasn't the, you know, that it wasn't the end of hope, that there's going to be some kind of, you know, some kind of, I mean, peace. I mean, you know, you're going to ask me what my hope is for 2024. And, you know, I mean, I just think the world is in just such an, it's just so much crazy shit going on right now, you know? And, you know, my hope in 2024 is that just people start getting smart, you know, and just start thinking beyond the ends of their own noses, you know, and you know, on so many levels, we need to be able to reason with each other and make peace with each other. We don't have to agree, you know, and we've got it here in America, it's over in the UK, you know, but it's obviously in the Middle East, it's just horrific. And not just in Israel, you know, you know, I don't know. I've been thinking a lot about that lately, and I've just been thinking a lot about religion and the meaning of God and how that, you know, and what that does for people and how it just, you know, the just what it causes, you know. I mean, and the bizarre thing is, I think that really we love each other. I mean, I'm so grateful that I do what I do, you know. And we go to concerts, right? And we perform at concerts, and you see people of all colors and all sizes and all shapes and all languages, and they are all dancing to the same beat, you know. Yeah. They're all dancing, they're all clapping to the same song, you know. And then they all go home and go back to their own lives. But for that moment, I'm so proud to be a part of that, you know, that at least for what we do occasionally, you know, we bring people together under a roof, you know, or under the stars, and, you know, bring people together. God knows, you know, I mean, that's what people need, to find a way to come together. We don't have to agree on everything throughout the course of the day. We can disagree about, you know, the best music of the year, or the best book of the year, or the best movie of the year, or even, you know, what we think is the, you know, the path for, you know, governing the our countries or whatever. But there's got to be, we've got to be able to find some way of aligning. And it's just, I feel it's just worse than it's ever been. And, you know, I don't know what that turning, you know, I don't know whether it's even possible, but that's my hope for next year.
That is such a thoughtful answer, John. And somehow I expect no less from you, but no pressure. What are you most looking forward to in 2024? I know you just mentioned peace, but this could be Duran.
The world gets smart. The world gets smart. Yeah. I mean, I'm not really thinking. I mean, I'm looking forward. I mean, from a Duran perspective, I'm really looking forward to the Cruel World Festival that we're playing at in Southern California. Yeah, I'm looking forward to going to Suffolk in East Anglia in July with the band. We're going to be playing festival down there, and we've never played in Suffolk, bizarrely. I'm looking forward to that. I mean, you know, it's kind of, I think my daughter's getting married. I think she's going to get married next year, so that's going to be a big one. So you know, it's I mean, I'm a lucky guy, you know. I mean, I have a extraordinary life. But I'd like to see some of that luck spread out around the world a little bit more, you know. It's hard to see, you know, I mean, so many people hurting, you know, just by, because they were born in a certain place, you know, or at a certain time.
I do. I think of that too.
But, you know, I mean, I'm glad that the band are working. We're engaged in a project we're going to bring. I don't know whether any of the rest of the guys talked about it, but we're going to bring Reportage back to life, which is the, you know, the unfinished album that a lot of the fans are aware of, you know. So that's a project that we're engaged in right now. Yeah, it's going to be good to see them. I mean, it's been nice to have a little break from each other, I must say. But by, you know, I think You know, they're going to be, Simon's coming out at the end of January. He's going to be staying with me here. And we've got a couple of shows. We're doing one in Phoenix, Arizona, I think. And yeah, at the beginning of February. So yeah. Oh yeah. And I guess, dare I say, Aston Villa, top four, Premier League. Roger must have mentioned that.
He actually, Roger, he didn't.
Didn't he?
No.
Oh my God. Oh my God. I mean, it's like, at right now, you know, we've got a Birmingham team that is killing it. And I don't remember the last time that happened. You know, I mean, it was probably 40 years ago.
Well, I cannot thank you enough for coming into the cafe. And you are such a thoughtful guest, John. I actually, out of all the band members, I speak to you the least. So maybe because of that, when we connect this way, I'm always impressed by you. And I've known you a long time, and I continue to be impressed by your thoughtfulness and your graciousness and how in tune you are with people. You have a real gift, and I am just want to tell you that because you do. You have a real gift, and I'm so lucky to be able to share in that gift. Anyway, enough of me. Have a lovely holiday. And
you too.
I think you're the January Cafe, so I'll probably be speaking to you quite soon, actually.
Okay.
And we'll see you then.
Great.